Hello, this is Suzanne Flaw interviewing Dodd Greenwood on the 22nd of May 2024, and we're sitting in her home, the Malt House.
Hello.
Now, Dodd, could you introduce yourself and tell us when you came to Hambledon?
Yes.
And why?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I came to Hambledon, in 1971. I came when it was changing from sterling to decimal coin, and you know, Tom at the garage there, he was serving petrol and doing everything there then, and he couldn't change all the prices on to decimal in everything that was in the garage shop, and that all the spares, everything had to be changed, and so I had a temporary job. I came here to do. Yeah, to do that as long as it took,
and that's it. London, is that right?
No. I lived over at Waterloo Ville at that time. There, then. Anyway, by the time that I'd finished pricing everything else there, I found that I had a job virtually for life from then on, serving petrol, doing the typing, the accounts. Driving people back when their cars were in for service, everybody had to sort of be driven back to their home because there were hardly any walking around at that time there then. Just a general dog's body, I suppose, or Girl Friday, PA, you name it, secretary, the lot there then. And when Tom eventually, when he went away, then I ran the garage. We had, one time we had four mechanics over in the workshop, which is now the Malt House. And by the time that we closed, eventually, in 1994, we were just down to one mechanic there then.
So the petrol station in the 70s must have been very different from a petrol station today.
Absolutely.
What sort of jobs were involved?
you name it. It was serving. We had the pumps on the pavement outside, and you had to serve across the pavement there to the cars. You also had to check their oil, and at that time you had to check their batteries, about once a month or so, to make sure that they needed topping up with distilled water. And anything more than that, they had to come over to the garage for the mechanics to do. They're blowing up the air, the tyres and that, they had to come over here. Just everything that was necessary there then. And of course, when the Texaco tanker came, everything had to stop. We had to make sure that nobody was walking past with a cigarette. And then the three tanks, the petrol tanks in the showroom, were opened up, and the tanks were filled. And then when it all finished and had been paid for, then I had to guide the tanker back round into Speltham Hill so that it could go back the way it had come, which at times was pretty hair-raising there because people wanted to park behind it. And I had to be walking behind, I had to walk behind it to make sure that they were out of the way. Because, quite frankly, I thought if that tanker had ever hit the George opposite or the anywhere, part of Hambledon might have come down in like a pack of cards there. Then, yes.
I remember you told me that some customers parked their car and went off shopping.
Yes. The village hall was up the just along East Street, just about three doors up there. Then up a lane, that was the old village hall, and Lady Empson had a ballet class in there, and the days that she was there, I was invariably having to sort of dig one of the mothers out of the you know, watching their daughter sort of doing a ballet, come and move their car off of my pumps because somebody else wanted to get petrol. And also they were inclined to sort of just leave their cars. Oh, all right, Dot, I'm just popping over to the shop. And then, you know, sort of half an hour later, they might still be nattering in the shop there then, so I'd have to tone them out. And I wasn't very popular with them because I was interfering with... there was a sort of a hierarchy. There were the people who had titles. We called them the knobs. And then the whole village really was naval. There were admirals, commodores, and right the way down to petty officers. And they all had their shipboard, and they brought it into Hambledon with them. Most of them were stationed up at Mercury at the top of the hill, that is now the burial centre there then. And some of the village men also worked up there, you know, on gardening and you know, on different things there then. So really, it was a self-contained place. We had a bus service which ran every half an hour, and then Wadhams in Waterlooville used to, if we needed the spares from them, they used to put it on the bus one end, and then I'd get and collect it from the bus when it turned around in the High Street. It always came up into the High Street and turned round, and then we could collect the spares that we needed for the jobs in the workshop. It was a bustling, busy town there then. I think after the naval, or below the naval, were the villagers. And then, of course, there were the trade, which was us, unfortunately, there then. And so sometimes it didn't matter what you said or how rude you were to us, because we were just trade. Anyway, apart from that there, that's my beef anyway, there then. But apart from that there, I could spend a lot of time laughing at people. And we gave a lot of them nicknames, which weren't very polite. But anyway.
Dot, you've got a lovely photo, which shows the garage.
Yes.
Could you describe a bit?
Yes.
Because I think it wasn't just where the pumps were, there was also a shop and offices.
Yes.
Could you tell us about it?
Yes. The man standing outside is my father-in-law, A.B. Greenwood. He came down in 1933 and bought the garage and moved his family down there then. And as you look coming along there then, the bay window by the front door, inside there was the shop, which, you know, had a counter and the tills and that. And then behind that was the office. And then behind the office was the stores. And that really was, you know, was the garage part of it, that part. And then the door that went straight through, it went into the house, which was behind. And then in a roundabout way, you could also go into the showroom, which was at this end. As you can see, the pumps were delivered across the pavement. At that time, I think it was Regent there then. And eventually they were, or Shell or something, I don't know. Anyway, eventually they were taken over by Texaco. And that most of our time was Texaco, the time that I was there anyway. And of course, I had to have a uniform as well there, which was the Texaco red with and white blouse and the signs and that there then. And the showroom would take three cars. If they were minis, they would take four. It would take four, you know, just, you know, driving straight in. And then behind that was a toilet, and then behind the toilet and to one side was my kitchen, and then there was a big utility room, just a cat slide roof really, that went across into the living room of the house there. I think that more or less, sort of answers, you know. And of course, when the war came, AB, they had to move out of the house because the petrol was being taken over by the army, and then they took over the workshop there. Then the army were in up in Berry Lodge up behind there. AB and the family, or his daughter, his elder son and Tom, they both went into the army. And for the duration of the war, AB lost his garage, and he was an engineer. He was quite a big up in the engineer, and so he was in Coventry or somewhere up there, working on aeroplane engines and designing and making them, and then their family came back at the end of the war, and started up at. But there wasn't very much in the way of, there wasn't anything in the way of cars, not new cars or anything like that there then. All the old cars they'd managed to keep going in the garage there. There had been one man who lived in number 3 East Street next door to us, and it was mostly bicycle repairs and accumulators, and charging up accumulators for radios there then. You didn't have any kind of transistor or even a decent sort of electric sort of a radio or anything there then. So everything in the war, all the war news, all came through the radios that had this. I forgot that bit. Sorry.
You said people would bring empty petrol cans. Is that right? To have them
Oh yes, yeah. Well, that was before the war. When it was old, the old cars, they would come with a 2-gallon can, and change it for a can that had 2 gallons in it there then, because they used to have them strapped to the back of the car and that. And in the garden, there were still the marks at the back of the garden there then on the wall, where they had a brick shed where all these cans of petrol were kept. I guess they must have been before the pumps, before the tanks were put in there then. But anyway, that was a really old car there. And so it was called a garage, but it wasn't really a garage as such there then, because there weren't very many cars around. I think before the war, there were only about 3. I know the local doctor had one, and maybe a couple of the knobs had a car there then, but apart from that, and nobody else. Everybody walked around there then, unfortunately.
And then you had the garage until the
90s. Yes, 94. Yeah.
What happened then?
The thing is, the garage trade went down. We used to sell everything, batteries, everything there, tyres, the lot there then. And then, like, Quick Fit and other shops started up just selling tyres and making a big profit, and selling batteries and making another big profit. And gradually the big things that we had sort of relied on now just, we're not possible any longer, because people wanted to get the cheapest, and you could understand that. And it was the same with the new cars. We did sell new cars for quite a long time, but then we would find that people would come in and say, they ordered a car, a new car, and by the time we got it through there, no, I'm getting one from so-and-so. I'm getting it a bit cheaper there then. The fact that they'd had to wait, for it there then, I suppose, sort of upset them there then there. But, that was just one of the things there. Everybody had a quota, and we had a quota from Wadhams in Waterlooville, which we had to stick to there then. But anyway.
And you mentioned the floods.
Ah, yes. Yeah, well, sorry. Yeah, the The death knell was the very first floods, when we had all the green goddesses and all the tires and all the pipes and tubes all down the road, all through East Street. The cellars were all full, and the water, you know, they tried to sort of get as much as they could through these pipes down to, opposite Lot's shop there, down to the trench down there. But unfortunately, there was an awful lot of water still in the road and that. And then the second time we had the flood, the first time it was difficult to get to the garage, to the workshop and that there. They had to come all the way down Speltham Hill and that. But then the second time, they just left us to it. They just put the sandbags all across Speltham Hill, and then houses as well, that were, where it was going to go in. It was in the houses there then. And you had to sort of climb over the sandbags to get across the road. But of course, the water was so deep and it was so fast. It was really was a fast river running through the middle of all these sandbags there then. And there was a bridge. Somebody made a bridge over the to get into Clark's shop, into the and then some wag one evening there got there with a blow up crocodile and attached it to the bridge. And then somebody else put a canoe, a blow up canoe there. But the thing was, if you stepped over these sandbags, then you were really up. Well, I had shorty Wellington boots, and it was well over the top of those there then, and it was just a case of climbing back out again and walking up the road with and then emptying my boots out there then there. Since then, hopefully we won't have floods again. But I wouldn't bank on it somewhere or other, because we were told back in the 70s, no, it will never flood again because we put this pumping station in down at Wells End. And then, of course, we did. It did, and it did it twice there.
The garage suffered.
Yes.
Nobody could get to you.
No, that's it there, yes.
And then I remember you said the final nail in the coffin, was it... planning from Winchester?
Oh yes. Well,
the big lorries.
Yeah, no. The thing is, this was on the late 80s. We had communication from the fire officer telling us that we had to close the petrol pumps down unless we could get the big Texaco tanker off the road. And it was a case of, well, you could knock this building down, you could knock number two down, and maybe number one as well there then, and your showroom, and the whole lot, to get the tanker off the road. Well, we weren't making all that much money on the petrol. Anyway, they gave us 3 years to sort something out. And of course, the villagers were absolutely incensed about it. They were losing their petrol, and couldn't we put the pumps and the tanks over on George's car park? I said, well, no, that doesn't belong to us. We can't do that there. Anyway, we then had to close. We had 3 years, and we had to close. We had the police making sure that we were closed on the date. We had to have the tanks, I don't know what they called it. Anyway, it was filled. They were filled with shingle and that. And of course, they were emptied. By that time, they were pumped out and that there then. And so that was the petrol finish there then. And so really, we were relying then on just people coming into the shop and also the workshop. But as I said there then, a lot of the workshop had fallen off as well there then, because the most expensive things were being hived off somewhere else. And so unfortunately, the last couple of years was really, really hard there then, and we had to eventually close. I always used to look at the old malt house and think, oh, that would make a lovely house. Yeah, that would be great there. Well, Tom had these bright ideas. When we left there, we were going to go. We were going to get a flat on the South Sea front up high so that we could watch the boats go by. And I thought, oh God, no, that'd be like watching paint dry. So anyway, eventually I sort of said to him, look, if we can get planning permission for the malt house, can we live there? You know, and this is what we did.
The malt house used to be
the workshop. Yes.
And what did that look like before you converted it and moved in?
The little bit where I have the parking bit now is that was into the back, into the garage, into the parking place of the garage. There was the malt house, and then attached to that, coming down the hill where the new house is now, was the big long barn of a place with corrugated iron roof, which met up with the building that's Clark's brickwork there now. That part of it was the drying floor of the barley for the malt house there then. And they would, you know, they used to cook it up somehow or other there then, and then spread it all out on the floor, rake it over, and then as it started sprouting, so then they would then take it down to what now is Orchard House, which was the place where they brewed it all up and made it into beer. That was a brewery down there then.
But you had the mechanics work here in what is where you are living now, and you said there were bits down there.
Now we had this converted. We sold off most of the drying green and the drying building to Richard Clark next door, because he wanted a back way into his premises. He had the shop and that there. But then we'd also got planning permission for the malt house, and then an extra piece to be put on, which was the front door and the garage, and also the kitchen at the back, and then a bathroom and small bedroom above that. We had a heck of a job getting the planning permission. We had to go back to the planners 3 times, having new plans made, simply because they wouldn't let us make a reasonable building of it there then. So what we have now was my design. And then the builders, when they eventually came there then, and we got the planning permission there then, I'd nip over from the garage there then and sort of, it's, oh well, we're going to put a wall there, and they're, oh no, don't put a wall, put a cupboard there. So I was sort of changing it all as it went along there. But it was fine for Tom and I. It was big enough, and the grandchildren could come and stay in that there then. So,
and eventually you sold the garage and moved.
The thing is, we had to sell the garage to be able to get the money to convert the malt house, and unfortunately, we really it was only a little bit of savings that kept the garage going, for the last couple of years. Eventually we sold number two to Dusty Miller, because he already owned number one. And back on the change of the century there then, before the 1900, there had been one man who had owned both the properties, and Dusty liked the idea of having his name on the deeds for both the properties again there then, which is what we did there then. But we decided to get a place that where we could live and store the furniture until the malt house was built or renovated. But he said, well, I'd just assume that you stayed in the house over here, number two, he said, until such time, he said, because I'm not ready to move in to work on it and that there. Then I knew he was going to sort of rent it out. Anyway, so we finished up living in number two with scaffolding poles coming through the front bedroom windows. And one time I came back from shopping only to find that where they'd taken part of the roof off there was water pouring in over, all over my china cabinet. He then sort of said, well, yeah, he said, I got this special offer. He said, they're taking the roof off, Dot. Oh, all right, love. And of course, we finished up with tarpaulins blowing in the wind and that there then. And we finally moved into the malt house at the beginning of June, and we had to move in when the builders were still here, quite honestly.
What year was
that was 94.
And then that was the end of the garage.
That was the end of the garage, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And after then, Dusty passed number one and number two on to both of his sons, one each to his sons. And then one son bought number two. And he had the insurance on the corner in number one there then for a while. After that they were just rented out, and it's been, they've been rented out ever since. So then, yeah, right.